Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Underestimated yet incredibly capable, this is the life of the underdog. Inspired by Andrew's journey and brought to life by legendary designer Black Oni, the Underdog Collection is a statement and an expression of perseverance and confidence for all underdogs. Check out the Underdog Collection at andrew-alliance.com/merch. That's andrew-alliance.com/merch.
Hey, what's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of The Show Radio. This is episode 597 of the show. And in this episode, we're speaking with David Jaffe, the legend,
who's also known for God of War and Twisted Metal.
And guys, enjoy the interview.
Tonight we have the one, the only David Jaffe. He is hails from Birmingham, Alabama. Now, what you may not know about him is he's the former heavyweight boxing champion of the world, but he did so all under the guise of being a sort of a shapeshifter. You probably know about that. He's from a different planet, actually. But the truth of the matter is he's happy to be here. He wants to talk about the Metal Gear Solid remake that's going to be announced on Monday, as well as the truth of the matter, which is Jim Ryan is actually a plant from Microsoft. Let's get into it right now. Miss Jeff, how are you doing, sir?
See, he does it so perfectly.
No, I'm not. That's not going to be. That's definitely not going to be before our intro.
It's a good intro.
It's a fantastic intro, but we love you so much. Thank you for your continued support. Thank you for your continued contribution to the gaming industry and especially your YouTube, because I jump back and forth in there all the time to see the things that you're doing. So Daniela, talk about our guest and then, you know, make him blush and then we'll start.
Oh my goodness. He's making me blush and I'm here.
Yeah, try it. Let's see what happens.
Thank you guys for joining us for this episode 597. I got the number right here of The Show Radio. We are joined by the fantastic David Jaffe here. Look at him. Look at him enjoying himself. That's a nice pipe.
That's a little off camera. Listen to me. I got these from some podcasters in Europe, and unfortunately it has this wonderful Gandalfian piece comes off, but I chew on it. I don't smoke, but I chew on it and it broke. So unfortunately it's too short, but it's beautiful. It kind of comes off, and one has a sweet tooth on it, but I think that's in the other room. And then this one has a Lord of the Rings tree. It's very
nice.
Total custom. Yeah. The sweet tooth one says Jaffe and it's got a picture of sweet tooth. I'm looking around for it, but whatever, you get the idea. Oh, hey.
We're good. We're on. What's up?
See?
Oh my gosh.
So let's do this show, boy. Let's do it.
So Danielle, you can start.
I'm gonna picture your Spider-Man.
I'll throw some nuance in there, but Danielle, start. What do you got? What do you got for David Jaffe?
God damn it.
I gotta say, like, I'm a little bit shy here, but I have to say, Twisted Metal.
Do you get shy around other people that are new?
No, I don't. It's just
let's do a little work. Let's role play. Okay, we meet each other at a party. We've never met each other before. Let's say, how would you do it? So I'm just standing there smoking my pipe, looking elegant as always. And what would you do?
Mm-hmm. Oh man. Hi, David. I am Danny. I'm a huge fan. And actually, the first thing I would tell you is you actually made, with Twisted Metal Black, you made my transition moving from LA to Hawaii so much better.
How come? And by the way, it's 2021 now. We say Twisted Metal African American. Okay, so
that's what we do.
So could you
okay, Twisted Metal African American.
Oh my gosh.
No,
how did I make that transition easier for you?
Well, okay, when I was moving from LA to here, I was born in Hawaii, but
you're
I
in Hawaii grew up right in now?
Yeah, I am. Okay. So when I grew up mainly in LA though. So moving back here, I got in a lot of trouble. So I had to live with my dad, and it was such a culture shock to me because it's such a, well, I live on an island of Kauai, It's not mainstream. It's still very country, very, very out there. Like, you are here and it just does not feel like the US is like anything. So yeah. I was like, you know, I was going through my goth phase, my punk phase. I did not fit in whatsoever. And it was so weird. Like, somebody invited me. He's like, oh, do you want to go to a Shaggy concert? And I didn't know who Shaggy was. Like,
it wasn't me. It wasn't me. Yes. He has enough songs to have a concert. He's got like one song.
He had one during that time.
And I was thinking Shaggy from like ICP.
Oh, I thought it was like Scooby-Doo. I don't know who the fuck ICP is. No.
So Insane Clown Posse. And
Yeah.
When I found out who it was, I was like, this is totally not my scene, which like kind of like made me this bigger underdog. Like, you are weird. I started playing a lot of Twisted Metal at that time, and I was playing it by myself. And actually, I started making friends that way because they were talking about games, and it was something that I could build this common thing with people, even though I had this completely different lifestyle, completely different look. We had something that was a common factor that we could enjoy together. Uh-huh. And I was still the weird oddball, but we had something in common. Like, okay, you're not that weird. And that just made my transition so much better. I'm still considered the weird one, but the weird one at video games.
And you were in New York, though. So when you were in New York, you had your people around you that were similar. No. You were always.
I was in LA, not New York.
Oh, okay. So
in New York.
In LA, when you were in LA, did you have your people around you?
Yeah.
Okay. So like, it wasn't like you've always were a loner. It was just when you went to Hawaii, or that was where it kind of fell apart for you.
Yeah. I just didn't know how to make friends. I had nothing in common with people. Like, I didn't do hula. I don't know all these proper things about living in Hawaii that made it so weird. I was so used to that nightlife in LA. I was like one of those LA kids who just like would go out at night, do whatever, have our fake ID or something like that. There's none of that. We don't even have a club on this island. We still don't. Like 21 years later, we still don't. So I go to
you like live on stuff. You like live on the island in that what's that new show, the horror show, The Mass, Midnight Mass. Have you seen that on Netflix?
I haven't seen it yet.
That's where you live.
Yeah,
You live there. Okay, well, I'm glad we could help you with your transition. I will tell you that my son, is very gothy. He would say he's not gothy, but he's very punk and guy. And all of his friends were over last week for a birthday, and it was just like, and I adored it because I had just a house full of freaky teenage kids that were like wearing, you know, all kinds of weird hair and outfits and, you know, dead rabbit head skeleton necklaces. I don't know what the fuck they were doing.
What kind of outfits?
I wonder if I'll send you some pictures, but just like, okay, you mentioned like, you know, like The Cure, like my kid goes to school every Monday and his hair is just like Robert Smith, just like exploded out of his head, you know? And he's like, I get so little work done on Mondays. And I'm like, why? He's like, 'cause my hair. And I'm like, well, why don't you brush it out of your face? He's like, no way. It looks good. And he does. He has a great fashion sense, which he does not get from me. But anyway, that's good. That's fun. I love hearing. You know, here's what I'll tell you. I hear a lot about Twisted Metal Black where people say, that game scared me when I was a little kid. And it's just, it's so, I talk about this a lot because as I'm getting older, I'm experiencing younger people who kind of came up with a lot of the stuff that we made that was successful. And it fascinates me because you as a guy that loves pop culture, meaning me, I have all those same kinds of, you know, stories of like, but for me, it's like, you know, Back to the Future, Indiana Jones, Superman, Star Wars, whatever. And when you're actually wearing the other, you know, hat, and you're the one who's working with the team to make this stuff, you don't have any awareness of what you're sending out into the world and how it may be giving people joy or pain or escape or whatever. You're just kind of going, come? I think how this
come?
Will be cool.
How come you don't have any awareness? What's happening during that time for you to, are you in a bubble or something like that? Like, can you expand on that?
Well, I mean, because you don't, you know, the kind of stuff people imprint onto pop culture, so much of that has to do, it has as much, if not more, to do with where they are in their life and what's happening in their life as it does the product, which is why a lot of times you'll see people who love things from their childhood that aren't very good objectively. Like, you know, I love the movie Clash of the Titans from when I was a kid. It's a horrible movie. I know it's a horrible movie, but because I saw it at a very important time in my childhood, it stuck with me, right? So kind of, you don't... You really can't plan for the butterfly effect. All you can do is kind of go, I'm making something with the team. We think it's cool. We're having at least one ear to the train track regarding the commerciality of it. And then the rest, there's so many other people that get involved. I mean, everything from, you know, the people who do the box art to the marketing, to the PR, to the guy who goes to Target where you bought the game and decides that's going to go in the end cap. So when you're walking by, you're going to see Twisted Metal. But you could have walked by and just as well have seen, you know, Time Splitters, right? And it could have been anything. But, you know, which is not to take away from what we do. It's just like, you know, I mean, you guys probably get it with your podcast now. And I know you're on Kind of Funny sometimes. And, you know, there's a lot of people who, well, you are, aren't you?
Yes, sir. But
why is that funny?
It's kind of funny. Okay. It still hasn't registered to me what some of those things mean. I guess that's why.
Right. Well, that's where I was going with that, though, is that, you know, Kind of Funny is a drastically larger platform than what I have on my YouTube. But even on my small YouTube channel, I have people coming at me.
That's disrespectful. your channel is pretty big. When you say small, what are you thinking about? Are you thinking about?
Well, I'm comparing it to Kind of Funny. Kind of Funny, you guys, the number of Patreons and subscribers and views
gotcha. Fair.
I wasn't talking penis size. Of course I'm bigger than Greg. Everybody knows that. Well, now listen. I've only seen it once, and that was because I got paid to see it. You might see it more often. That's your own personal shit, and I don't judge. But what I'm saying to you, though, is... Being on Kind of Funny, for example, on my, and I'm not being self-deprecating, but when I say on my small YouTube channel, meaning even at a channel my size, my scope, I get people saying, man, your show really helps me a lot. It keeps me company. You know, I feel like I'm with my people when I watch the show and all this stuff. I have to imagine you guys know, even though that's not why you necessarily get up in the morning and keep it at the front of your brain, that you guys are bringing a lot of comfort to people and a sense of community to people that may not have it. That's why I was talking to my ex-wife, because we were talking about Thanksgiving plans, and I'm like, well, okay, just remember I'm streaming in the morning. And she's like, oh, I didn't know you streamed on Thanksgiving. And I'm like, I always stream on Thanksgiving. I always stream Christmas because there are people who don't have anyone to spend it with, you know, and we do a Thanksgiving special and we do a Christmas special just because I know there are people out there that are just kind of like, I wake up and the whole world is celebrating and I have nowhere to go. I have no one to be with. And that's, I kind of like, yeah. I like that community that you can build with this stuff. But my bigger point is you must know what you guys are doing as well, what you're building, but it probably doesn't live with you all the time. You're just doing your work, right?
Right. And I don't think I know. I know that the value is what the person makes it for themselves, right? Mm-hmm. But I don't know what that is, and me just creating, you know, a controller video or software overview or, you know, a podcast where we're just doing Fireside with David Jaffe. I don't know what that means.
You will have, yes, you're not allowed and you're probably not supposed to. We're kind of like not mentally, you know, wise enough to understand, again, the butterfly effect. But maybe in 20 years, just like with me, I didn't know that I was helping with your transition from LA to Hawaii. I didn't know that, you know, even games that weren't big hits, like Calling All Cars. I have people who tell me I played that with my dad before he died and he got cancer, but we played it always together. And that means a lot to me, even though that was never in our brains. We weren't sitting around going, let's make the cancer game. We were sitting around going, you know, let's make a cool fucking game that feels like NBA Jam. And then that happened. And it's like, holy shit. Who knows? Who knew? So.
Is there some point where that
now the next Sorry, what?
Is that something that motivates you when you, well, I guess that motivates you, you hope you have that impact whenever you are creating Ready Dad. No.
It only because, I mean, there was a time when I was trying to use that as motivation because, you know, any job you do is hard. And even a job that you love, still there are days where it takes, oh, I got to fucking edit this video. I love editing my videos, you know, but there are days where I'm just like, oh, I'm tired. I don't want to fucking do it, but I know I need to do it.
Right.
So, you know, there are days where you're just like, okay, well, maybe I'll motivate myself thinking about, but this will mean something or whatever. And it's like, that works for a few minutes, but I guess it's kind of like the creative's version of going to a self-help seminar and you feel great coming out of it. And after about a day and a half, you've forgotten all of it and it doesn't really apply to the real world. So, I mean, you're aware of it, but you can't really use that as your North Star. In fact, I would say if you're of the mind that you want to do that for people in whatever field, creative, being a dentist, you know, whatever, it doesn't matter. The more you do the things that you like, that are interesting to you, that are authentic to you, the more, I would say, the chances of the result of that action, putting things out into the world that other people connect with, I think that's probably your best bet. But I think if you consciously go, I'm doing this because I want to build community. I have a vision of a guy who's all alone in his dorm because he couldn't afford to go home for Thanksgiving. And you just can't.
That may not even be a motivator for you to go on, especially if you're framing it like that.
I mean, it's got to be, I've got to be chasing after something that it's exciting. And the side effect of that is there is a nice side effect, which is more people are going to respond to it.
Right.
But I'm a big
The motivation has to be intrinsic, right?
It has to be
for you to keep going. Right. Right.
And that's why I don't care about, I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to make a lot of money making content, just like I made a lot of money making video games. But, I'm a big fan of what's called the empty elevator theory, which is, if you haven't heard of it, it's kind of a self-helpy term. But the gist of it is I don't chase fans. I don't worry about losing followers. I don't worry about any of that. I am being authentic. And in that, I would rather have a group of people that really connect with me and I connect with them than worrying about having, you know, I don't want to be the Jay Leno of video game channels, you know, and nothing's wrong with Jay Leno. But if you remember Jay Leno, it was as vanilla as you could get. It was like he never offended anybody. He never had an opinion. He was just like a warm glass of milk at night. And that's great, but I'm not interested in being a warm glass of milk at night. And so I don't know how we got on that because we were talking about intrinsic, right? So the point being is that, yes, I have to do the things that are personally motivating and just have faith that something will work out and that there'll be enough people that dig it.
Okay, so about your kids. So you're not doing it for other people. Now that your kids are older, they have inputs. They know what you do for a living. Mm-hmm. They understand it.
They do.
Is there ever a point where they're like, I think this would be a great idea. I'd love to see this. And then you take some of their ideas to add into your things.
Oh, I asked my daughter. She's a great artist. She doesn't like her art, but I'm like, dude, I ask her all the time. I'm like, please come work with me on the show. Help me edit. Help me do art for it. I will pay you. Help me produce it. She just doesn't want to. She's like, no, fuck you, old man. they're not really into video games. So they know what I do, and I'll run things by them. Like sometimes, excuse me, I know I'm eating a Tic Tac on your show. I'm sorry, but
with David Jaffe. It's all right.
I don't even use them as, I know some people use them as breath mints. I just use them as candy. So I just double fist them. They're so good. The orange ones. But, my kids, I'll show them thumbnails or I'll show them merch or I was sitting at a table with my son the other night. And my merch for the longest time never was moving. Nobody was buying it. And we were all having dinner, like the four of us the other night. And I says, I started selling a lot of hats and t-shirts recently, more than ever. And I said, you know what I figured? I said, you got to make stuff that guys feel if they wear, they could still get laid. Right. Because a lot of my stuff up until that point had my stupid pixel face on it. And it said Gabbit and Games. And so I'm like, what guy is going to want to walk around,
right,
you know, going down to the grocery store with my big fucking chubby face on a thing looking like a fucking 8-bit character? you get what's happening games. Let's go fuck. No, I'm not going home with you, right? So, and my son says, wow, you just learned about marketing. I'm like, fuck you, motherfucker. So they absolutely help in that they will give me honest opinions, but they're not sitting around watching their dad's streams. No, not at all. They don't care, which it makes me happy.
What about their friends? Do they ever hit you up about that?
Oh, yeah. Some of their friends absolutely watch it, and they're aware of it. And, yeah, it's fun. I mean, it's, you know, they'll in fact, I've had their friends call into the Discord, and I bring them on game night, and I, you know, shoot their friends and stuff, and it's fun. But, yeah, but it's not, you know, I mean, look, my Google Analytics tell me that most of my audience is about 10 years younger than me. I have some younger, some older. I'm very surprised and happy to report that recently, my audience now is 10% female on a consistent basis, which is weird because because my games have never appealed to females mostly. I'm not saying women don't like God of War or Twisted Metal, but the fandom that I encounter is usually male, right? Or people who call into the show on the Discord. I know a couple of women who call in, but the vast majority of them are usually male. And so I'm just going, oh, I guess in the analytics for the longest time, I've been doing this for 3 years. The analytics say almost 100% men. And lately, the last 3 months, it's started to shift and I've gotten about 10% women, which I don't think it's weird, bad. I think if somebody said, hey, Jaffe, do that for my channel. How did you do that? I'd be like, I don't fucking know. I have no fucking clue. So
do you know none of the games? I'm sorry, Daniela. Go ahead.
No, I was like, during that transition, when you started noticing that was growing, was there something that changed that you did, or you just maintained? Was there a different game? Is it different topics?
Excuse me. I mean, I did start doing more interviews, and maybe that could have been what it was, but it's the only thing I can think of.
I definitely listen to more stuff if it's interviews. Personally, yeah, I do. Yeah. I do.
Okay, I'm not giving you guys my secrets.
I want some secrets. No, you got it with the game zone, because that's what I was gonna ask. You know, was it different games or different interviews? So definitely appreciate that, Daniela. So last
time. Oh my God, do you know who's coming on this month? I got a woman who's coming on, and she is one of those people that communicates with serial killers in prison. So she has letters from the BTK killer. She has letters from Charles Manson. They sent her artwork and origami and all this shit. And this is her fucking hobby. And she thinks they're crazy. And she's not like wants to be romantic with them. She just likes to get in their heads and figure out what makes them tick. So I can't wait to talk to her. I'm hoping she's going to come on in about 10 days. So
I can guarantee you, you'll definitely have a bit of women listening on that, because I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is. I think it's very true that women really like watching those murder mystery documentaries.
Mm. Yeah.
About like serial killers, about mass murderers. It's just like there's something about it. Like I've been on that binging lately.
Ultimate bad boy is a serial killer. You don't want to admit it. You don't want to admit it. But when you're walking down the aisle with your soon-to-be husband in your head, you're seeing Charlie Manson. I understand.
I hope they make a Hulu documentary out of me.
Oh, my God. Have you created the content in your life that it's worth making a movie yet? Or are you saying down the line?
I'm laying down that foundation. I'm working on it.
Oh, shit, man.
But I'm just saying, like, that is a great interview to have. And I can definitely say, like, that is something you lay down in that context about what, you know, this woman does and what she's had. Like, that is super interesting. Like, I will make sure, like, I'm going to bookmark this.
Yeah. And the thing is, I want to know, like, I want to talk about how her husband feels about this. Because there's got to be something weird about that you're having these conversations with other men. With the exception of one, they're all men, and they are being intimate with you through their letters. I don't mean sexual, but I mean they're opening up and expressing their histories and all this. And I don't know. I mean, that's got to be really a strange place to be if you're the guy who is, that she comes home to at night. You know, it's a very unusual dynamic, I think. So
he's a vanilla husband to add balance to her life.
It may be. She may be the freak, and he's just like, oh, now, Diane, you know, you go do your thing, but I'll make sure the house doesn't catch on. I don't know. We'll find out together. Won't you tune into the show coming up soon?
Definitely, I will. I would hope that she has like a whole separate mailbox, because that'd be the husband.
They don't know where we live, right? Mailbox about, she says, like 20, 30 minutes out of town. So it's not even in her neighborhood where her P.O. box is.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So you said 3 years. Yeah, it's 3 years. So were you doing Twitch before?
I mean, I've had a YouTube channel for over 10 years, even when I was making games in the business. But I got serious about it I started playing with it around, you know, mid-2018. And then by the end of that year, I was just super hooked. And I was doing Twitch and YouTube, but then I decided to start monetizing eventually, and you can't really monetize. I forget which channel, maybe it's both, if you're restream IO to both. So you got to kind of pick a lane. And so, most of my stuff's on YouTube. I just started the podcast version of the show.
Congratulations.
But yeah, I did see that.
Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been about 3 years. I mean, the funniest part about it is, and I should know this, but I don't know this world. So I'm learning and fucking up and learning and fucking up. And so I don't know what to ask. You just had a whole little therapy session in your head. No one else was involved.
I
wasn't even going there.
That was on purpose. You can ask me.
What I was saying is, it would have never occurred to me to ask anyone, because I didn't know what I didn't know. And what I'm going to tell you, you can look confused, but I'm not done with the sentence
yet. I'm thinking. Go.
So here's what it was. So I would be getting my shows coming at about, my live streams on YouTube coming at about anywhere from 70 minutes to 2 hours, just somewhere depending on the news of the day and how much fun we're having, blah, blah, blah. And I have the hardcore that will watch the whole fucking thing. But my average on those shows on YouTube is like 23 minutes. And so in terms of how much somebody watches the whole thing, which obviously is not very much. And so it's like, you know, and I liked that for a long time, because that would help me get, I continually listen to my shows and try to get better. I'm always trying to figure out what's working and what's not. And I'm learning. But what I found when I did the podcast, though, and I know this is so obvious, but I didn't even think about it, was that the podcast retention, even though the audience numbers are a lot lower because it's brand new, the podcast retention is like, you know, out of a 70 minute show, the vast majority of people will listen to like 55 minutes of that show.
Absolutely.
And I'm like, I'm not doing anything different. It's just how they come to the show. And when they hit play, they're in sort of a place to go, I'm going to drive to work, clean the house, whatever, and I'm going to listen to this. Whereas YouTube, it's got to be on. It's got to be on at least one of your screens. It's just things like that that I would ask you, but it never would have occurred to me. So in my mind, I was just going, oh, I have to figure out how to get my retention up. My show needs to be better, and your show always needs to be better. But it never would have occurred to me that part of that retention problem was simply the wrong format, you know? So I've started doing more videos on YouTube, and I've started, you know, I still do the stream on YouTube, but I started doing the podcast, assuming that's where people are going to watch the longer bits of it. So
that's awesome. Are you clipping anything for like, you know, a minute here, a minute there?
I do all that on Twitch or Twitter. I send that out to Twitter. And then sometimes when there's like a topic I think that's relevant or interesting, I'll put it up as its own video. We were talking yesterday on Friday's show about something I need to clip tonight or tomorrow. Oh, it was Jim Ryan's talking about how he feels that the games Sony PlayStation makes are some of the best entertainment in the world, but he's frustrated that only 10 to 20 million people will play a PlayStation game, just given the realities of that market versus movies and music and television, which are ubiquitous and everywhere. And so are you guys hearing that? Why am I getting that beep sound? I hate that. I hate that fucking Discord sound. You're not hearing that? Good. Okay. Then don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. But anyway, so yeah, I will clip that stuff and I will put it out and it certainly helps. I'm going to be, you know, I have like an 8-point plan that I'm working on of like, okay, you know, cause one of the cool things about this, when you get to do it full time, is that, you know, you get it. It is a job, you know, and you get to sit there with it and you get to go, you're your own boss. And it's just like, okay, I want to make this stream bigger. I want to make it better. I want to make it more interesting for people. What do I do? You know, and I've whittled it down to about 8 ideas. And I think it's even tomorrow, I'm scheduled to sit down with all 8 and start getting practical about how to implement those. Right. So, I mean, that's the fun. That's a fun part about it. One of the fun parts about it is that, you know, you really are in this tiny little boat on the ocean, but you can fucking steer that motherfucker wherever you want to. That level of freedom is absolutely addictive. Absolutely addictive.
Just with you saying freedom, I always like.
Oh, were you thinking of the George Michael hit Freedom from the 90s? It was Freedom 90 with. Oh, okay.
I'm thinking more of freedom of speech here. Is that. I really admire how you are very blunt, very straightforward, very unfiltered. And you're, I want to say you're one of the very few, if not the only, like, you know, game designer that's out there that's willing to do that and not care about like this cancel culture. Like, is that something that you developed over time, or is that something you just like straight from the get go?
Well, like, okay. There's two answers to that. A, this is who I am. I've always been that way. I've been that way since I was a kid. But let's be totally clear. Part of that, what you perceive as fearlessness is, but it's fearlessness that is born out of class privilege and financial privilege. Right? Because I was successful enough in video games, and I'm not saying I'm some rich dude in a mansion, but I was successful enough and we invested well enough that I'm not worried about making, you know, mortgages and car. I don't have a car payment. I always pay cash for those, but I don't worry about my bills. Like if I was, I'm just like everybody else. I mean, as much as I don't like the game, if you've stepped in to play the game, you're playing the game. And if you want to do well enough to be able to buy your way out of the game, then you got to play the fucking game. You know, and so for me, yes, I have always been blunt. I was blunt at my work. I was blunt when I was an employee of Sony. But, you know, now I just, you can't cancel me because what can you do? You're going to take away my YouTube show. Okay. I'll put it on somewhere else. You're going to take that away. Okay. I'll fucking put it on cassettes and mail them out to people. I don't fucking know. I mean, but that's not because I'm some badass. That's because I have some money in the bank and I don't need, right? It's important to understand the distinction because, you know, it's, yes, it's part of my personality, but it's also the fact that I'm very lucky.
What is the game today?
That was missing a verb. What I heard was the game today.
What is the game today?
For me or for everyone?
For you and for content creators. Ooh. Because I put you into 2 separate categories when I think about what you've contributed and how you're contributing now. And one of the questions I even have is this your legacy contribution or do you have other things in the pipeline? But what is the game today? And do we know the rules to play them?
I don't know if I understand the question because I don't know what metaphor you're using for the game.
Sure. So when you're creating content, you have to be brandable. You have to, you know,
okay.
those kind of things. Like what is the game being played today? And for content creators who are,
I don't know. I know what I'm playing. And like I said, it always goes back to authenticity and the empty elevator syndrome. Because I don't want to do this. The only reason I love this is I can make a genuine connection with people, right? If somebody were to say, well, here's how you can grow and make this sustainable for the next 20 years of your life, you have to become the Dick Clark of YouTube people or whatever. You guys are younger than me. You're like, who the fuck is Dick Clark? Who the fuck is Jay Leno? Just think about the most vanilla, bland, nothing's wrong with them. But
it was the ball drop guy, right? The ball drop?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. you know, if we all live long enough, at least men will all be the ball drop guys. But yes, he was the official first ball drop guy. And but you know, I don't want to do it if I have to play a character that is David Jaffe. A, because I'm not going to do that. And B, because who the fuck needs more of that shit? There's enough people out there that leave their essence at the door of the job when they go on camera. And especially, you know, there was a time, you know, when you had CBS, you know, ABC, NBC, Fox, and that was kind of it. And the gatekeepers, you had to play a role. But now, you know, there's that theory, 1,000 true fans, right? You only need 1,000 true fans to be able to make a living doing any kind of creative art, content creation, music, whatever. Like mathematically, depending, it's a specific formula, but you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I would rather be, if we're looking at music, I would rather be the guy who can barely pay the bills, but always pays the bills and has hardcore fans that absolutely love what I'm doing. And I love connecting with them versus somebody on stage every night that's singing to millions or thousands, whatever, but I don't feel any of it. I have zero interest in that. So anyway, the point is the game to me is to try to grow a big enough audience that this is sustainable while still allowing myself to be myself while also having to keep one ear, like I said earlier, on the train track of commerciality. I'm not just turning on the mic and doing whatever the fuck I want. There is a part of that, but there is also going, today it's probably time for a stream or a video or something that is more about a mainstream thing people are into. So and yesterday I
deciding,
did.
Yeah, how are you deciding that? Because I saw you playing Metroid earlier today.
Hated it. Fucking hated it.
Yeah. Okay, so how do you decide that? Are you, is it news? Is it ear to the streets?
I have a list on Twitter called like Games or whatever that has like 40 different outlets, you know, the obvious ones and the not so obvious ones. There's obviously the IGNs, the GameSpots, the N4Gs. I am on Reset Era. I'm on NeoGAF. I'm just consistently looking, and you know what bubbles up to the top. Like you could go, if I wanted to make, I'm trying to put out 2 videos a day when I'm not streaming, right? So if I wanted to make a video tomorrow and tomorrow was not, like there are days I'll put out videos that are very specific and I know they're for a very specific part of the audience. Like here are the 10 movie influences from God of War. Okay, well, people, or here are the design tricks we used in God of War or Twisted Metal that we've never talked about. Well, fans of those series are going to show up, but that's kind of where it's going to plateau.
Right.
So if I've done enough of those, I'll go, you know what, let me go to NeoGAF, let me go to N4G, let me go to my list on Twitter, and, you know, what are people really talking about that I actually can add something authentic to? I won't talk about, like one of the things that I struggle with is I never have had any desire to consider myself a journalist. So I don't do a news show. Like sometimes I'll listen to Kind of Funny Games Daily or I'll listen to Sacred Symbols. And sometimes they can get content simply out of, hey, at Ubisoft today, they announced a new Assassin's Creed and this is what's going to be. And that's, you know, they'll fill 20 minutes with that. But I don't give a fuck about that. So there are days where I'm just like going, I'm having to make up my own shit. I don't lie, but I mean, like the other day I was like, let me look up people who have died playing video games. And I'm like, okay, well, that's an interesting topic. I can do that any day. And it was a whole topic that we spent 20 minutes talking about the weirdest 5 cases of people who actually died while playing video games.
Yeah. And that's pretty evergreen. Dude, that has a long
time. It is. And it's hard though. It's hard to find those and it's hard to come up with those. But my point being is that where I find the news is that, but I not only have to find the news that's meaningful and relevant, but I have to find the news that I think I have something interesting to say about it. Because if it's just the news, who the fuck needs to wait for a YouTube video and an ad and all that just to be told what you can see in 20 seconds on a headline on N4G? So
that's value to somebody from your perspective, even though they could hear it somewhere else. And that's the other thing too that we were talking about earlier.
What's value? Just the news?
Right. Coming from your perspective and you're giving it. Oh, and they will wait for that.
As long as I have a take. But what I don't want to do is like, here, I'm just going to go to N4G. I'm going to go to NeoGAF right now. I'm going to just read you the top 5 headlines. I want to see what they are.
Okay.
Because I'm curious. Okay. So let's see. Right now.
2042.
I played that. I had a thought on that. We talked about that a lot on the show. Okay.
Metroid.
Hang on. Are you there?
Probably. Yeah, yeah. Metroid
Dread. I'm not blown away by the OLED Switch. Far Cry 6. Video shows features of old Battlefield games that aren't in the new one. Rockstar removing GTA Trilogy on Steam. I think I would sit with those for about 5 minutes and realize I have nothing more to say about them that I've already said. And I would have to go to the next section. But I know it's a good time to be talking about Metroid. I could put out a video about my impressions on Metroid that would do okay. But I think there's a lot of people who think I just try to be contrarian. And I don't. But again, it goes back to that empty elevator thing. I mean, look, I played about 3 hours of Metroid. Have you played it? Have you guys played it?
No.
I am not interested in it.
I was watching you play it.
It doesn't grasp me. I saw it. It just didn't grasp me like that to even want to try.
And it's got, you know, and again, I'm not pissing on it. I'm sure for a lot of people it's a great game, but it's just like, you know, the video I would make about Metroid is, what are you people talking about? You know, is there really a Nintendo bump in reviews? Because there's nothing wrong with it. It's fine. But you guys weren't raving over like Luigi's Mansion 3 Dark Moon or whatever it was called, which so far, I mean, I finished that fucking game is much better than Metroid, right? You guys weren't raving over Yoshi's Crafted World or whatever the fuck it was called, which is a great game. Suddenly, you know, say, you know, I would do a video like that, but people think I have to be careful in that sense, because sometimes I'm just like, I'm not trying to be contrarian, guys. I have a very specific thing that I like. And if you came here to have your metaphorical dick sucked by me and feel better about your choices, that's not this. There are plenty of places you can go to watch people fanboy out to what you love and get validation, which is such a gross thing that people need. But there it is. There's a lot of people. I mean, I could have a really big channel if I basically loved everything and I was excited about everything.
You're not going to do that.
I'm not. Why would any? I mean, at what cost? It's almost like when I, you know how agent, what's the guy in Hitman called? Agent 5175. Agent 47, that barcode, I see people who go through their lives like that, and it's like an energy meter on the back of their head. Every day they do it, they're selling a little bit more of their soul to the devil. There's a great Jay-Z quote where he says, I know people who are really successful, but I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they come home at night and look themselves in the mirror, and they're not happy with who they are out in the world, and then they go to bed and have to get up and be that person for the world again. He says, I couldn't do it. I'm not saying that makes me better or worse or more authentic. There are people that would say, great, Jaffe, I'll retire in a goddamn, you know, huge cabin up at Big Bear. And, you know, you can go to Mar Vista, California and hope to God, you know, there's rent control. Right. I get it. But I don't want to live that life, man. So.
OK, so you bringing up, you know, everything's positive, everything like that. What are your personal opinions as, you know, a content creator, having your own podcast, having your own channel, and as a game designer, when you have people who receive your games or you're reviewing games and everything that they get, I love this. This is the greatest thing. This is the game of the year. I love, I love, I love, I love.
Well, I haven't had that in a long time, but that said, sure.
But like, what are your opinions about it? Like, do you trust those people or do you think?
So I think that's one of the reasons I kind of became disillusioned, right? Which is, and maybe one of the reasons that, you know, I've gotten the pleasure and the horror of seeing behind the curtain of what Oz is, right? So I have been the guy for a period in my career that ran from about 1995, we're talking a long time ago, to like 2008. And in that period, for the most part, I could do no wrong. My reviews were great. The sales were great. The press was great. We were all in love with each other. But there came a point where you or I realized that all those things that I coveted so much for so long before I got them were just like, eh, they're not real. They're not authentic. And I don't mean that like, cause you know, I've heard people say that before I got it and I'm like, oh, that's just, you know, lip service to make yourself sound more, woke or whatever the term would be or the descriptor would be, but it's not that. It's that, you know, you chase these things if you're like me because you think they will bring a sense of wholeness or completion or happiness or what have you. And it's not that they're not nice. Of course, it's nice to make more money than you were making. Of course, it's nice to feel like the work you've done, people are happy with and benefiting from. I'm not like, you know, a monk or something. But that said, the other parts of it, the trappings of it, you know, they don't, it doesn't mean anything that IGN gave us a great review or that GameSpot gave us a great review. It did. And then I realized it was very, it's one person's opinion, you know, and I've said, like, I mean, there's a lot I would not go back and change just to get a good review, right? You know, I could have launched Drawn to Death, which was my biggest flop of my career. And I could have gone into that game and I could have taken out all the stuff that a lot of critics found offensive or a lot of critics found vulgar or problematic. But I wouldn't have been happy because I wanted to make a game that felt like I remember being 14. And when I was 14 and drawing in my notebook and my friends were doing that, that's the kind of shit we were doing. And I that was important to me. It doesn't mean the game was great. There were problems. The game was floaty. The shooting didn't feel as good as it should have. I'm not saying I'm a misunderstood genius and everyone should love Drawn to Death. I'm just saying that the idea of what those things mean to me, I think, becomes very clear after you've experienced it enough that it's really kind of meaningless.
That's a good answer. And well, okay. Well, from the perspective of a fellow content creator and, you know, giving your own new show and your relations to it, like, how did you feel about somebody like, say, okay, us, I don't know if you did any research for us or if you were going to be invited on somebody else's show, do you do a history of them? Okay. Like, do we have something in common or are you just kind of one of those, like, I love everything that is ever given to me for free type of person? Do you ever do that? Do you stay away from it?
I have no idea. That question started somewhere and it became a different question, didn't it?
Okay. Well, okay. So,
because at first you were asking me about, do I do research on you guys before I come on your show? Are you about to give me something for free?
No.
Am I getting a chair?
If somebody wanted me to be on their show, right? I'm going to see if our vibes work or anything like that. For me, it's like, if you're the type of person that just seems like you'll say whatever you think will make you look good to get more people to give you free stuff, because there's content creators like
that. Are there things that you get for going on people's podcasts? Because I've been fucked. I've never gotten a goddamn thing for going on people's shows.
No, I meant more of like just the personality trait to see if you were going to get along with this person. Like, do you stay away from those people who just give, you know, positive reviews, even though it's like, okay, your game wasn't that great. Like, is there something? Maybe I'm not phrasing this question very good.
You are not.
I am not. I am bombing it so terribly.
You're bombing it. Let's try it. That's terrible. I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. because it sounds like you're talking about two different things. On one hand, it sounds like you're asking me, when I get invited on a podcast, do I research the host of the podcast and what they want to talk about to determine if I would be a good fit for that podcast? But then it sounds like you're saying, when I go on shows, do I look at things they like and they're going to tell me I'm great. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, no. Okay. So if you're going to collaborate with somebody and
does that mean just going on someone's show? Are we currently collaborating?
I would say so. Or just hanging out.
No, because it's got to be consensual. It's got to be consensual.
It has to be consensual.
I only do consensual collaboration. I've learned my lesson. Me too. Hashtag me too.
Oh, man.
So sorry.
Okay, so yes, we're collaborating.
Let's just make it a broader thing to associate as a content creator.
Okay.
Are there types of personalities that you avoid?
No. But after I get to know them, but anybody can invite me on their show, and if I have time, whatever their size, I'll go. And if I don't like them, I won't come back. But, you know, I don't. You know, I wouldn't go. I've said I would want to interview Nazis. I would want to interview KKK members. I despise them. I think they're horrific, but I'm just like, I need to talk to them. How are you the way you are? How are you raised? How do you actually feel this way? How do you not realize that your hatred and racism and blindness is not coming from a hole that you have to fill psychologically? You realize your anger is incredibly misplaced. You probably hate your father, right? I mean, that's the kind of shit I would want to, you know. So I'll talk to anybody, but, you know, I mean, I don't like run a background check or anything. I just show up. I didn't know you were going to be here. I would have dressed nicer.
I'll leave. Then it's okay. No, I feel like I totally bombed that question. I'm so sorry.
Did I do it? Did I answer
yes,
it good?
That was it. I just had a dumb down. I was like overthinking in my head, but
okay.
I got it.
Okay.
Andrew, you look like you want to ask something.
Yeah, I've just been thinking about your YouTube channel and your journey in the last couple of years. Do you feel like this is your legacy contribution to the world, or is there things that you're working on that we're not aware of right now?
I mean, anything that I do, because again, I'm coming at it from a place of privilege. I'm doing what I want to do. So, you know, I would absolutely love to find a way to make I think my show and my stream and my shit's pretty good. But I think you have to think that, right? Anybody who does creative work, whether you're an artist or an actor or a musician, there has to be enough of an ego in there, not like a negative ego, but enough of a sense of, I think I have something to offer. So right now, I think I have something to offer in this realm. I think I'm pretty good at it, and I really enjoy doing it.
I agree.
That's my focus, but I don't think about it like I don't value legacy. I don't worry about leaving things behind. Now, again, that's privilege too, because I've kind of potentially already done that. Right. I mean, a lot of people mistake, my connection with the new God of War, and they're like, oh, Jeff, you're always salty. You don't like the new God of War. You're jealous, this, that, the other. And I'm like, you know, maybe you have to walk in my shoes to understand, I created something with a team in 2002 to 2005, and then a little bit more before I left. And I haven't really been associated with it other than, you know, little things I would do with Sony for, you know, 15 or so years. And even though, yes, it's changed, just like Batman, the Joker, Superman, Spider-Man, they all change. But I laid those formative bricks. I was the guy, if it wasn't for me, there would be no Twisted Metal TV series they're making. There would be no God of War 2018, let alone Ragnarok. You know, that was me willing something with an incredibly talented team into existence. And the fact that I may never do anything else that is big in the zeitgeist, I get to go to my grave. My kids get to you know, when I'm long gone, go, hey, that was my dad's thing with the people he worked with. So that may be why I don't worry about legacy, because I've already done it. But it also may just be that I'm just like, we're all going to die. We're all going to be forgotten. I mean, whenever you think about the most famous caveman in the world, always fascinates me. There was a time when this little tribe of cave people, there was like, you know, Thundar, the caveman, and he was the coolest guy in town. And people were like, no one's ever going to forget you, Thundar. Nobody remembers fucking Thundar, right? So we're all going to be forgotten. So that would be what I would say. Well, what just happened there? What just happened there was like in the movie Ex Machina, where we actually had a moment because the power went out and you weren't here, and we got to communicate. Did you see that movie Ex Machina?
Yeah.
Boy, that's a good one.
Oh my goodness!
Good movie. That's a
good movie. Speaking of legacy, and I got to do this because it was I told my son that I was going to be speaking with you, and
how old's your son?
Question: 17.
Your son is 17.
Yes, yep. Sir.
Good God almighty. You look like you're 23.
I am 37.
That's amazing. Although, that's amazing. You know,
reason.
Well, no, they do. So my mother-in-law is full, she died, full Japanese. And then my ex was Eurasian, right? And she had this little cartoon, my mother-in-law, in her fridge, where it was like, you must have seen it, but it was like Asian woman at like 18, 30, 55, 60, and they just looked the same. But then it got to like 80, and she suddenly was this tiny, short little lady with the curly hair and the big, giant sunglasses. And I'm like, it's exactly what my mother-in-law looked like. It was just like, that's so fucking true. How does that work?
And that's what I'm waiting for, too.
Right.
As an Asian, I'm tall for an Asian. I'm 5'7". I'm 5'7". The rest of my family is like 5 foot. And as they've gotten older,
they've shrunk.
Like my aunts, they're shrinking. So they're under the 5 feet. So we have these family photos where I look like a giant. And I'm like, I am just 5'7".
That's right. I understand. But, so anyway, the point is, wow. So you're talking to your son, not to derail it. I was like, because you look like the kind of person age-wise that would have a son who's like six. And I'm like, how the fuck is a six-year-old going to know what the fuck I'm, who I am? But okay, 17-year-old's probably played some of our stuff. Okay.
Yeah, he's actually playing COD right now. I don't play COD. Mm-hmm. But no, like speaking of, I guess, your legacy or therefore of your projects, how does mm-hmm. it feel that knowing that, you know, you're, the original Twisted Metal, like there are parents that are playing with their kids, because I've played it with my son.
Yeah.
Does that blow your mind at all?
Like, I mean, every now and then, like, you know, there was my dad died going on 10 years next year. And about 2 years ago, somebody sent me a clip on Facebook that were, and my dad was a big football guy. You know, and there were, I don't think it might have been college or NFL. I don't remember, but it was the announcers, and somebody brought up in the announcing booth during the game broadcast, like while they were calling the game, Twisted Metal. And then they started talking about their favorite Twisted Metal cards from when they were kids, like Spectre and Mr. Slam and all this shit. And I was like, oh, of all, you know, my dad was incredibly proud of all three of his kids and what we've done. But he would go into the grocery store whenever I was in a magazine, and he would talk to everybody. This is my kid, you know. But to have him know that his thing, which was football and sports and all that, that they were talking about, you know, something I had gotten a big hand in, I think that would have blown my mind for him to see. But no, I don't, you know, it's got to be a very personal connection for me to feel that way. Otherwise, it's just we were, and I'm not like aw shucksing it, but it's just like we were working. I was trying to make something really cool. I wanted to get rich and famous. So I was working really hard. And the team was working really hard. And the outcome was this game. And once it's released, people do with it what they want. I worked just as hard and put just as much passion into Drawn to Death, which was a failure, as I did to God of War.
I really liked it.
I appreciate it. I did too. But it was a failure. And there was nothing about my drive and will to create that with the team that was any different. It's a little bit, but you know, not that much different than the same thing that existed back in the first, very first Twisted Metal. So it's just sometimes they work and sometimes they don't.
Okay. And the only question my son wanted to know is, who is your favorite character to design and create a story for?
At all or in Twisted Metal?
Twisted Metal.
I've always had a particular fondness for Shadow or Mortimer, who drives the hearse and who's kind of like an 19th century Charles Dickens style character with the big stovetop hat and the coattails and all that shit. I really like him and I like his vehicle. Sweet Tooth obviously feels Sweet Tooth and the Preacher feel very connected to me personally. And again, I would like to think most of the key people on the team have similar feelings. I'm not saying it's all mine. I'd like to think Scott does and Kellen does and Michael does. But for me, because we're all contributors. I mean, they bring every day. Like, in fact, there's a picture behind me there of Sweet Tooth. That's concept art from Twisted Metal 2. And that's original concept art from Lee Wilson, who also went on to design stuff in Halo. And that's one of the first times I ever saw Sweet Tooth drawn anthropomorphically. So if you look back at Twisted Metal 1, it's basically just a head on an ice cream truck. And the marketing guys on the box cover kind of anthropomorphized the head. But it wasn't until we got into this one that we started to think, oh, this is a character, right? Well, that's not me. That's Lee. Right. I'm the guy who said, I want to put the head on the truck and I want to write the character of Sweet Tooth. He's the guy who said, you know, let's do this. And Scott Campbell's the guy who actually modeled the truck. And Randy Zorko is the guy who did the code that when Sweet Tooth turns, he goes up on two wheels and it makes him feel crazy. Right. So all of these things are our own passions and interests that we throw into it. As the director and co-director of that series, I'm certainly acting as a barrier and a receptacle of this makes sense, this doesn't make as much sense to put in, but we're all parents of that particular franchise, or at least the key people. Some people just show up and they do their work and they go home. But the key folks, our DNA, all of our DNA is in it. But for me, Sweet Tooth and Preacher really represent Preacher because of growing up in Alabama and just how conservative and racist and, you know, religious it was. And I just didn't like that. I love aspects of the South, but I obviously hate those aspects of the South. And then Sweet Tooth, because I think, you know, I mean, I think just like Kratos, I think we're all a little bit crazy and we're all fronting and we're all pretending that we're normal. And I love both those characters because I think they, you know, are accepting and embracing in very unhealthy ways, but they're still accepting and embracing the actual truth, which is there's this genuineness to letting that guard down. You know, in a lot of ways, you could say it's exactly what I do in my stream as well. I mean, I'm not murdering people in my stream yet, but if I can get members and Patreons, you goddamn right I will. But but there is a value to me. I value highly tearing down the artifice of decorum and societal norms, because I think it's dangerous and I think it's inauthentic and I think it's a life poorly lived because it's not real. And it's a very weird comedy of manners when I see people doing that. And I'm just like, why don't you just talk like a real person? Why do we have to do this dance? You know, I hate that, man. Hate it. Hmm.
So, is there anything that you dislike like about the industry? Is there something that there more stuff that you dislike that you wish just wasn't there, but it has to be?
Well, I mean, there's the obvious stuff. You know, there's the harassment and the toxicity and all that shit that's you know, surprisingly rampant. The more you hear about it, it's like, Jesus, that company, that guy, you know. So there's that. I think it's been absolutely fascinating for me to be you know, everybody thinks the time in which they work is magic, and it probably is to some extent, but I was a kid, I was 7 when I got the Atari, right? And so I got to come up as a fan, the first generation of fans of this art form. With Atari and Pong and Space Invaders and all that. I was getting quarters from my dad, living in the arcades, the whole thing. And then I got to work on 16-bit games and the first 3D games and all that. And I think don't say a word. I want to remember your question. I lost my train of thought. Don't say anything because I want to see if I have dementia. I want to make sure I can get back to it. Okay. Come on, Jaffy, do it. Do it. Come on, you fuck. Okay, hang on. You are asking me, why was I talking? Oh, hang on. It's coming. Old app, Atari, Apple coming up, seeing the industry progress to where we are now. Fuck, I lost it. I can't find it. What was your question?
What other aspects of, I guess, the game development process from the beginning to the end do you not like?
Yes. To be there? Right. Okay. So, right. Sorry. So what it is I have seen, there was a very amazing sweet spot that existed between PS, you know, 16-bit, but really PS1 and PS2, where the budgets were just so that we were still able to make things about whatever the fuck we wanted. You had just a unbridled sense of creativity in terms of subject matter, ideas, art style. And you had a big enough audience that it could be very profitable and very exciting, but your budgets weren't insane. So you could take risk and you could try things and you didn't have to, you know, sell your soul to the devil to get a green light for a 220 million quadruple A game. And then I see it now, and it's so much, there's so many people who have to buy in and get behind it, at least if you're talking in the console space, that, and it doesn't mean the games aren't creative. I still think Sony makes wonderfully creative games. A number of big companies do to some extent, but if I were to get back in the industry, or if I were to get in the industry now, it would be probably in the double A space or the indie space, because I could not jump through the corporate hoops needed to secure a green light and keep it. Like, if I were to be making God of War and I wanted the nudity and the sex in it, which I would, and Sony said no, I'd have a real problem with that. I'd rather have half the budget, a third of the budget, a fourth of the budget, and make whatever the fuck we want to make. So when you say what I would change, I understand why it is the way it is. It's not evil. It's that whenever you start spending that much money, you're going to have a lot of people who feel the need, and sometimes they're right and sometimes they're wrong, feel the need to sort of give their buy-in, head of marketing, head of PR, head of production, head of this, head of that. The head of production's kid who said, this is what's really hot because PewDiePie was playing it, whatever. And I don't want to do that. Right. I don't have any interest in being that. So I think I kind of got it right at the right time. But if I could change anything, it would be, you know, for us to be able to be a lot riskier still in this space, you know, without people running the risk of losing their companies, because, you know, you take a dive, you know, you take a dive on Drawn to Death. It was $12 million. It's nothing. I mean, it's a lot, but it's nothing in terms of Sony's bottom line. You take a dive on a $210 million game, you know, that's a big fucking deal, right? So I understand the need to be more conservative, but creatively, I don't like it.
Is there any games that you've pitched that got denied that you would still love to make?
Yes.
You care to share one?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. I mean, I've pitched a bunch of fucking games over the years. So I'm trying to think which one might be the most compelling for people to hear about. I had this game that was called Inauguration Day, right? And it was basically a walking simulator horror game that you played the president of the United States on his first day at work on Inauguration Day, right? And it's all about this guy whose dad raised him. I went to USC for college, and there was a quarterback named Todd Marinovich, who was like on everybody's radar to become the next great quarterback in the NFL. And his dad had raised him from like a tyke to be this machine. And everybody was always like, he's never eaten hamburgers before. I mean, it was all this stuff. Like, he was almost like just a weird kid in a bubble, because he was like living this very disciplined life to be this guy. And he ended up, of course, crashing into drugs and all this shit. But I love that idea of a dad who thinks the government knows a lot more than they're telling us, which we know is true, about things like aliens and the afterlife and all kinds of shit they might know. And so he raises his son to basically become the president. Like, everything he does is a ruse to get his kid into that position so that on Inauguration Day, he can find out the secrets and reveal them to people. And so he ends up going into this section of the White House, which is a secret, and he starts learning all this shit, all this crazy fucking shit. Just, you know, stuff about aliens and stuff about this, stuff about that. But in the end, what it turns out is that the same guy has been president for like over 100 years. And what they're doing is somebody gets elected, and then they bring that guy down into the tunnels and expose him to all this stuff. And then they swap the president's consciousness, the actual president's consciousness, who's been the president for 100 years running this whole thing, with the body of the guy who's the new president. And the old president ends up going to some crazy homeless guy on the streets, and he's going, aliens are real, I'm the president, whatever. But everyone's just like, you're a fucking crazy homeless guy, and no one believes him. And the real president resumes power in the form of this new body, right? So that was sort of this thing I wanted to do, which I thought would be a really cool game. And I still want to do that game at some point, but I just kind of... ran out of gas to really get, you know, to pitch a game, man, you got to pound the pavement, man. You got to go out. You got to fly all over the world. You've got to get concept art. It is so much work that.
How soon would you want to do that again? If you were to think
I don't know if I ever want to do it again. I mean, again, I don't feel the need anymore. Like there really was, if I was in therapy or something, I'm sure I've talked about this before, but there was a need to, and maybe it's just being younger, I don't know, but there was a need to lay some bricks. There was a need to put a stamp down and really, you know, make my version of Steve Jobs's dent in the universe. Now, granted, my version is much tinier and much less significant, but it's still, everybody has their dent they want to make if they get the opportunity, whatever that dent may be. So for me, because I did that, that fuel is no longer in the tank and I'm enjoying what I'm doing now. Like I genuinely love getting up and prepping a stream or going on live and doing a stream. That's more fun to me than getting up and figuring out a way to pitch this game to 50 people around the world with my agent. I don't want to do that. So.
Yeah, I totally respect that because the amount of stress, time, and just the constant, like, no, this isn't for us. Like,
it's not that you're bringing up the things that would push somebody away. That's afraid of negative consequences. I'm not worried about that. Mm-hmm. It's just the payoff doesn't entice me anymore. Like what would I get out of it? Like I've already had the game in my head. I know it's a cool story for me. So I get it. Now I got to bust my ass for 3, 4, 5 years, raising the money, working with a team, fighting with people, flying all over, being tired, just so someone else can experience something I've already gotten in my head. And no, I'm good. Or I can have a crazy, stupid idea. I can wake up at 8 a.m, take my kid to school, come home, set it up, stream it in the afternoon, get my response, move on with my life. Right. I mean, that's the immediacy of streaming and making sort of content on YouTube and Twitch and Twitter. That immediacy is so appealing after having a 20-plus-year career of you have an idea and it may be 2, 3, 4 years before that idea, if it even comes to fruition at all, is represented enough to allow someone who's not you to be excited by it. And I've done that trek and it's so much better to have the idea in the morning and have the payoff at night. I'm good with that. I like that.
And be your own boss and be your own creative person that you got to convince.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
That's the one thing. I also had like the creativeness to go back to when you were talking about, you know, being able to, like in the 90s, I guess, to have the creative freedom to create games. Yeah, you don't have to worry about that budget. This is a kind of a multiple question thing. Because of social media and having that direct contact with, I guess, the studio, the teams, what was it like in the 90s to get, how did constructive criticism or hate come through to game developers about a game they didn't like? Because now you have people tweeting at you, sending DMs, forums.
I mean, I started as a tester at Sony ImageSoft. So we would get letters, like we would get hate mail because we put out some terrible games. We deserved hate mail. But we put out like these Sega CD games that back in the day, what they were was the actor would look into the camera and be like, "You little liver piece of crap, why are you getting killed, soldier? Get back," you know, talking right to the screen, right? And we would have parents write us and it's like, "This made my kid cry. He feels terrible about himself." And you know, I mean, that was pretty much it. And then we lived or died by the reviews because that's all we had as any indication that we were doing okay or not. But yeah, I mean, once the internet came, I love the internet and I love social media, but it's absolutely, you know, it's you gotta
accessible.
Yeah, but I'm trying to think of a good, you know, it's almost like one of those things like a lion. This is a dumb analogy, but it's like a lion, like when you hear these lion tamers or like Siegfried and Roy back in the day or whatever, where it's just like they're beautiful, they're majestic, they're amazing, they're fun, but you have to kind of respect them or they can really kind of drag you down, right? So I think social media is incredibly cool and incredibly fun to reach out to people all over the world about all kinds of things. And I'm kind of obsessed with it on some days. But you have to be able to sort of keep your distance enough to know it's not really that real. And what the people that you're dealing with online are presenting you with, just like in real life, they're presenting you with a version of themselves. But the version online, you know, is obviously free of any fear of consequences when their name is, you know, Peter Parker, Ben Reilly /33402. And you're just kind of like, you know, whatever. So, you know, are you ready? Okay. He's got to go outside too. Okay. I got like one more question. I got to take the dog out.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, I'll leave that to Andrew. And also, like, Sega CD is my absolute favorite console of all time.
Oh, okay. We did Sewer Shark, and we did Ground Zero Texas, and
love those.
Yes. And Crisscross Make My Video, and I think there was another Make My Video, but I forget what the band was. So yeah.
I absolutely love it. Sega CD is highly underrated.
I'll do this question, and then we'll do plugs. Okay. One thing that you remember from your Alabama growing up that still sticks with you today, you know, maybe a story or something real quick that sticks with you today.
I mean, so much of it. I mean, I'm 50 years old. I don't feel 50, right? I mean, I know when I was younger, 50 was like, are you out of your fucking mind? I don't understand what it means to be 50, but I'm 50 according to the birth certificate. Hello, beast. How are you, little dog? I'm no little dog. I'll fucking eat your heart. I know, buddy. There's a dog down here. I hope so, Jaffy, or otherwise you're talking to air. hi. But you know, I had this moment the other night. I was listening. I was a little high, and I was listening to like, 70s music, which was the music that kind of played on the radio when I was, you know, I wasn't a teenager. I was an 80s kid, but it was like, you know, when I was like six and I was driving around with my mom in her car doing errands and stuff. And, you know, some Barry Manilow song or some such shit comes on the radio. And anyway, and I just allowed myself to kind of go back in time. I know we'll go. He's going to shit all over. You got to go to the bathroom. Anyway, I can get back to you tomorrow if you want to edit the end, but I got to take a nice crap. No worries.
David Jaffe, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. The dog's got to shit, people. You. All right, thank
Gavin
you guys.
Gavin Games, YouTube, bye, David Jaffe.
Yeah,
thank you so much.
Jaffe,
I appreciate you. Love
YouTube,
you.
All that good stuff. Bye, guys.
Takeaways.
Oh my goodness, it's man, my heart dropped when I screwed up that question because I was overthinking it. Like,
that's all
no.
Good.
No, I know. It's just it's very interesting to be able to talk to somebody who has had an impact on your life. I mean, I wouldn't say he's like my top game designer, but he's definitely made games that have impacted me at different points of my life. So that's something to be able to talk to someone. He said, "What would I say to him?" And I'm like, "I'm a fan. I'm not a super fan." I don't think I'm a certain super fan of any specific studio or anything like that. I'm a fan. I like what they do. And even bigger now that he says that he worked on Sewer Shark. You're like, I didn't know that. So that's really great to know. And I still love the Sega CD. But it's great to be able to have these open conversations and to have somebody who's very unfiltered, because I feel that with a lot of personalities that you come across, and they come on, they talk, or even what they put out on social media, and that's why I brought it up to him. It's like there's a filter on them. I know that there's more that they want to say, but they don't put it out because they don't know how they're going to be perceived, how it's going to be taken. And he does that very he used the word fearlessly. I wouldn't say it'd be fearless. It's just very naturally.
Yeah, freely,
where
openly.
It comes from a level of privilege, I guess. Which is very interesting because I didn't think about it like that. So I'm very grateful that he said that. But for me, it's just learning to get to that level. I mean, I'm not going to just call out anybody for me personally, but to be confident in your standpoint, to be able to say what you want, how you want it, and not back down from it. It's not like, I would just do a 180. I'm like, oh no, that's not what I meant, and go and follow the rest of the crowd. But to really just to be able to state what you want to state confidently, and not really care about, how, party A or party B is going to, take it, because that is your opinion and that's what you're saying. And I think that's really great. And he is a great talker. I want that.
Yeah.
So he's amazing. It was great to have that conversation with him.
Yeah. So I really enjoy every time I get an opportunity to speak with him. I was on his show a couple of months ago, and that was pretty dope. And we talked about a whole bunch of different things. I think we went almost 4 hours, maybe, just going back and forth on different topics and things of that nature. And I wanted to do a fireside chat, with us. And I did tell him that we were going to be here. So I don't know why he thought you were not going to be here. But at any rate, I just love the fact that he is so honest with who he is and the ups and downs of the industry for himself or just the up and downs altogether. And just being very honest about, what he believes and what he stands for. And I think that's always been something I really appreciated.
Yeah, I'm going to live forever with bombing those questions.
No, you're not.
No, you're not. You have no idea. My heart dropped. I'm like, oh my God, he's not understanding me. What did I do? Did I overanalyze? I didn't want to. I feel like there was things I asked him, I think, that most people do. But I also wanted to ask him stuff that I think is kind of out of the box. I hope it was out of the box. I feel like that's the thing. With people that's been in the industry for so long, they get asked, the same repetitive questions over and over and over again. And I'm trying really hard. Let's try not to do that. But I don't know. I hope I did okay. I don't know.
It's fine. You did fine. So this is 597, right?
597. My biggest takeaway is he thought I was 23.
Yes, you do look young. So that is a blessing.
That's a highlight. It's okay.
That is a blessing. So yeah. So I'm just excited for maybe getting back to more conversations like this and just pull individuals in. Some of them will be individuals we've spoken with before. Others will be brand new individuals. And I think that I just wanted to get back into just having conversations with individuals, and it doesn't have to be a fancy, wallpaper or anything like that. I love the fact that it ended the way it did, because it shows you real life situations, right? Things happen, and there's things that you have to do, and I'm okay with that. So 597, I'll just say, guys, make sure you subscribe. Thank you for watching. Thank you for tuning in. I really do appreciate Daniela for being here and just being part of me ever since episode 340. And now we're approaching almost 600 episodes, and I think that's just amazing. Yeah. That's a testament to her and her gifts and how awesome she is, and that she has grown so much in the podcasting world, and I'm just so happy that we get to create content together. So I'm excited about that. So Daniela, thank you so much for everything that you've done and everything you continue to do behind the scenes, and even when we record shows. I really do appreciate you. And close us out and we'll get out of here.
Thank you guys for listening and tuning in with our Fireside Chat with David Jaffe, with Andrew and I. You can follow us on social media. You can follow Andrew at twitter.com/URIYYA. And you can follow me at twitter.com/MissDJM. And until next time, we are two away, three away, two, three, from 600. Have a good one, guys.
say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.